WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My next guest, Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi, has a lot of experience rounding up votes for Republican legislation. He's the former Senate Majority Leader and former House and Senate Whip. He's also the author of the new memoir, Herding Cats. You're an expert on getting party members to vote the way you want them to. Do you think techniques have changed in the Republican Party to get the vote in the way you want the vote within Congress?
I think it's changed over the years. It's gotten more sophisticated in many respects. There's more involvement of outside groups in the work to get a vote. And some people would say maybe that's part of the problem when you start bringing in outside lobbyist groups or interest groups as a part of the process, then they begin to influence issues based on their own desires and wishes. But that's done on both sides of the aisle. I do think that maybe in the House of Representatives, the pressure techniques have gone up considerably. But remember, it's easy to be in the minority. When I was the whip in the House, the Republicans were in a minority by about 40 or 50 votes usually. And so you were able to hold your people together better because in the minority, you have to. When you get in the majority in the House or in the Senate, it's not enough to just be, critical or to throw bombs, so to speak. You have to produce a result. And to do that, as the House and the Senate has become more partisan, you have to win so many votes on party lines. In the House, in the 80s, I was in a position where I had to get like 190 out of 196 Republicans, and then I had to get another 40 or 45 Democrats in order to win. So it forced you to be more bipartisan. So clearly it is more partisan now for a variety of reasons, and that forces you to really work to hold your party members in line. It's tough.
You mentioned the influence of lobbying groups and special interest groups. Do you think groups and individuals who are more on the far right, such as the Christian Right, the Club for Growth, Grover Norquist, Americans for Tax Reform, do you think groups like that have become more influential than ever in influencing the vote of Republican congressmen?
Perhaps they're more influential, but it's another example of be careful what you wish for because you're liable to get it. I remember in the 80s and 90s pleading for people that had not been involved in the political process, including people of faith, to be more involved because it was their government too. And there was a little bit of an attitude that, well, if we're in a religious situation, you don't want to be involved in politics or the art of government, if you will. And so there was a disengagement. Well, there's a lot more engagement now. And I don't think that's all bad. There's no question that they, some of the votes that we have on the issues of marriage or on the flag amendment, which is advocated by, military groups and veterans groups, they clearly influence the fact that that winds up being on the agenda and gets voted on. But I do think that sometime some of the people on the right, some of the religious groups, people like James Dobson, have been extremely, aggressive. And in my opinion, their language sometime has been very unfortunate.
In the book Off Center by our earlier guests on today's Fresh Air, Jacob Hacker and Paul Pearson, they say that primaries have become a tool for Republicans to move the party further to the right. For example, if you're in a Republican district or a Republican state where the party's pretty sure that a Republican's going to win the next election, if an incumbent hasn't voted sufficiently in line with the party's policies, with the party's legislation, they will be challenged in the next primary by an opponent who is further to the right. And that opponent who is further to the right will be very well financed by groups who are further, who are far to the right and who have a stake in moving the party in that direction or keeping it going in that direction. Would you agree that primaries have become a tool for keeping people in the party in line?
I probably would agree. And my question is, what's wrong with that? If you don't vote the way that the people think you should, and you should vote against them in the primary or vote against them in the general, one of the things I tell people is, even if your next-door neighbor or your brother or your brother-in-law runs for office, if they don't share your views of freedom, free enterprise, free markets, you ought to vote against them.
My guest is Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi. His new memoir is called Herding Cats. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Republican Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi. He's the former Senate Majority Leader, former House and Senate Whip, and author of the memoir Herding Cats. Senator Lott, you lost your home in Hurricane Katrina. What's the state of your home now, and are you having to go through FEMA or private insurance to try to rebuild it if that's the course that you're taking?
Well, like so many people on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, we lost our home and everything in it. And I mean, when I say lost it, I don't mean gutted. I mean it was wiped away. And the interesting thing about that was not that it was my house, but that it was a 151-year-old house built in 1854, and it was 11 feet above sea level and 10 feet off the ground. And yet it was completely washed away. And my situation was very similar to my neighbors. Their houses were either completely gone or the water washed through it, and they're going to have to be bulldozed. And my little neighborhood in Pascagoula, Mississippi, is still a mess. But most of us that live on the Gulf of Mexico or live on salt water, whether it's Atlantic, Pacific, or Gulf, I think it takes a different kind of personality to live there with the risks, but also the pleasures. And then for me and my wife, while we've struggled with it, because we lost basically over 90 years of mementos and pictures and furniture and everything that we'd accumulated, we in a couple of years, our intent is to build back smaller, cheaper, lower to the ground, with the realization that it could be washed away again. But it's been very hard to try to come to terms with the amount of the magnitude of the devastation, the debris, and people are having to, tear out everything in their houses, and people that were 10, 12 blocks inland were completely inundated with water. It has been a very, very hard recovery. And frankly, I've been extremely disappointed in the bureaucracy of the FEMA officials. And I talked to a city manager this very morning and emphasized that at some point you have to say yes or no to these people. Give them a permit. Tell them what they can do. The uncertainty right now is just having a very bad effect.
Some people see how FEMA handled the early part of Hurricane Katrina as being a kind of case study of what went wrong in the Bush administration. For example, appointing somebody who wasn't really qualified for the position of heading FEMA, FEMA being very slow to respond. The budget for FEMA had been cut under the Bush administration. What do you see as the moral of the story?
Well, the first point that you need to make on that is that the magnitude of this disaster was beyond our comprehension. This is the worst disaster, I believe, in the history of the country in terms of the length and breadth and severity of it. And so I think that FEMA and a lot of people, including charitable groups, were just overwhelmed by the magnitude of it. But then beyond that, I do think that the level of, in the case of FEMA, they were underfunded, undermanned, and overwhelmed. And now I find out also they're eaten up with bureaucracy and they have an attitude problem. So I have been disappointed in the response of FEMA and other agencies. There's no question in my mind that, Mr. Brown, who's the head of FEMA, was not really qualified for the job and was overwhelmed by it and was doing everything wrong. As I said, right after the hurricane, he was acting like a private down there, on the ground with photo ops when he should have been acting like a general back at headquarters, making things sure that ice went to the right place and trailers were moving and all of that, and he didn't do it. But now, on the other side of that, this president has a lot of extremely capable people. People like Chertoff, the Secretary of Homeland Security, is very competent. He was new on the job, and I think he was not well served by some of his underlings, but he's brought in new people that have been doing a better job. So there are plenty of competent people there. I think, though, there has been an inadequate follow-through. It's not enough for the president or cabinet secretary to fly into Gulfport, Mississippi, or fly into New Orleans and say, goodness gracious, this is terrible, help is on the way, and then fly away and not make sure that, in fact, the help gets there.
Senator Lott, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Trent Lott is a Republican senator from Mississippi. His memoir is called Herding Cats.